T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
High fastball. Now the throw into second base. And they've got Garcia. Hendricks does not move. Tucker Barnhart the throw. And the challenge there when you have a pitcher at third is you can't force the catcher into thinking about not throwing through because he's not as worried about the runner at third. 2-2. Struck him out. So now Liam Hendricks has to come back and strand a runner who's going to start the inning at second base. 2-2. Hit hard into center, and Cincinnati walks it off. Only one run in the series for the Reds, and they get themselves a split.
Tony, without using Hendricks as the runner in the second inning, was that an intentional choice? As the rule book says, you could have, you know, used Abreu as the pinch runner in that case.
You have to use the guy who made the last out, and that was Vaughn, not Abreu. So Vaughn made the last out.
The rule book, the MLB.com, said if the player in the batting order immediately preceding that half inning's leadoff hitter is the pitcher, the runner placed on second base may be the player preceding the pitcher in the batting order. Like, the umps explain anything like that? Or?
Well, you know, I didn't know that. We all thought that Liam was going to be the runner, and that's why I wanted there, because if you wanted a double switch to keep him in the game, if you look at all, you know, Abreu back to Moncada and so forth, that's not who you want to double switch out of the game. So I wasn't aware that Abreu could have run. I thought it had to be the guy who made the last out or that spot in the order.
The league made it really clear that was going to be a new rule in spring training. So, yeah, I don't know that that's come up. We've played several extra inning games now. I don't know that it's almost come up a couple times. Did it come up once? Yeah, one time maybe. So, but, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to think about in those extra inning games. They are fun, definitely, to be a part of, hopefully to watch, but there is a lot going on.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Our thanks to the fine folks at NBC Sports Chicago for the highlight or low light, whatever way you want to term it. And interesting to hear from Tony La Russa, James Fegan asking him some questions there. James Fegan with The Athletic. We've had him on the program, does a great job and knows the rules better than Tony. And David Bell is the manager of the Reds, and he's aware of the National League rules, which apparently the White Sox weren't, or the manager didn't care about.
Thanks for nothing, David Bell, because he did not do anything except for make Tony La Russa look worse, if that's possible, because it's like, oh, yeah, they talked to us at spring training about that. Now, granted, it's a National League team. There's going to be more awareness probably with National League, lineups and the pitcher batting and coming up in these things than it would be for an American League manager. But it goes without saying that you need to have somebody on your staff that knows the new rules inside and out. There is no excuse. So we have talked about how the Sox didn't have any runs and they only had a couple hits. That is under the category of excusable. It happens in baseball. But what Tony La Russa was unable to do in knowing the rule and admitting it, that's more inexcusable. And I think that's what triggers people like Sox fans that you heard the passion in Josh Nelson's voice. Molly, you've heard it in you all morning. Definitely yesterday feels like a tipping point, perhaps, when it comes to Tony La Russa.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we haven't hit it already, to be honest with you, David. I just think that the problem is it's not getting better, you know, and it's unfair to all of us. It's unfair to the fans. It's unfair to the team. It's unfair to Tony that what's going on here. There's a real struggle happening, and you know, as we mentioned, you're talking about this idea that that you've got a manager that is kind of figuring out the rules as he's going along. You got a manager that is getting used to the game as he goes along. You've got a Hall of Fame manager that has been out of the dugout for 11 years, and it's quite frankly showing some rust. And I think that that the idea that it's just going to improve is one that I think people have a hard time accepting, because it's 29 games into a season of 162.
It's more wishful thinking than anything. You don't have evidence that would give you anything to base your hope on. And you just feel like, you know, we talk about when players struggle, you look at the back of their baseball card. When managers struggle, you look at their credentials. Tony La Russa's in the Hall of Fame, but those credentials were, you know, put together and assembled a long time ago. And 10 years is a long time in baseball, and the game seems to be happening way faster than he's ready for. And I just think that yesterday underscored how this is, yes, he may not be equipped to handle all of that, but this is an organizational breakdown as well, beginning with his bench coach and who was not able to tell him that this was a case, whatever his staff, you know, it's one of the largest staffs in baseball, as we were finding out. And also, you know, the PR mechanism that was not in place to protect Tony La Russa from himself post-game, when he gave us a soundbite that was reminiscent of Terry Bevington in those days.
Oh my God.
That's not something you want to hear from your manager, because it leaves a mark.
And Jim from Streamwood is a very sensible texter. He texts in, "I don't think Tony La Russa had a good day on the job yesterday. Too bad, because they need to start building wins together consistently." That's exactly right. When you have opportunities to win games, you need to take advantage of them. And if you're looking up in the division at the end of the year, or if you're not a playoff team by the end of the year, it's these moments that we're going to go back to. And we're going to remember that day in May and what went on in the 10th inning. And again, you know, I get it. They didn't score a run. They didn't put anything together. Sonny Gray was really good on the day, and they couldn't get any runs going. But when you start with a man on second, you've got to take advantage of it. And when you get that man to third with one out, get him in. That's it. No matter what, get him in. Got to score. Can't go into the 10th inning allowing them to walk off. I mean, even if it's as Ozzie Guillen said in the postgame, if I had to put Frank Thomas in center field, I'd have done it.
Absolutely. And oh, the irony of having the Dodgers and the Cubs in their extra inning game last night, one which the Cubs happily swept with Anthony Rizzo with the big hit. But they had the situation with the pitcher being the designated runner and having to go to the batter that preceded the pitcher, because both managers were well-versed on the rule after what happened with Tony La Russa was made such a public thing. And maybe they knew it already, but how ironic that it came up last night for both teams in that extra inning game.
All right, let's get to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. We'll start with Joe. Joe is in Wisconsin. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Good morning, gentlemen. First, I want to talk a little bit about the extra inning rule. As somebody mentioned, it's really not an extra inning rule. It's a National League extra inning rule that applies only in National League parks.
Okay.
It's something akin to a ground rule. And I think, you know, it's minutia. The fact that he didn't have a total grasp of that is excusable. All right.
Wait. Whoa.
Why?
Where was the game played?
In a National League park.
Okay, so you need to know that rule. Period, end of story. Don't make excuses.
It would have been nice if he knew it, but he didn't. It's like a ground rule. It's minutia.
No, it's not. Not when it leads to whether or not you win or lose, and it involves directly with strategy as it pertains to what you're going to do and who you're going to employ.
We disagree. I want to talk about the stealing now.
Okay.
Okay, I think that was defensible. Number one, three good things could have happened. The catcher could have held the ball, not throw it. Number two, he could have thrown it in the center field. Number three, he could have stolen the base. If he steals the base, at that point the Reds may walk Hamilton and load the bases. At that point, it's a force at home plate, and the pitcher won't have to slide. It's a defensible strategy.
With Tucker Barnhart behind the plate. Not with you when you don't need that run to matter as much as the runner on third base, and not when the pitcher is on third base. You're not going to fool anybody into thinking he's going to have a double steal that's being executed there. No, I disagree totally.
Yeah, the one thing that could happen, running yourself out of an inning, actually happened. So the negative would outweigh the positives there. It'd be great if they threw the ball into center field. It'd be great if a guy dropped a pop-up. It'd be great if Leury was a hair faster and stole the base. It would also be great if they didn't try and somehow they got the run in and the game was extended, and who knows? You know, maybe things would have been different in the bottom of the 10th.
You know what also would be great? Knowing that you're going to play, what is it, 20 interleague games, and you're going to go into National League ballparks, so you better know the rules. That would be great, too. Know the rules.
Yeah, it would have been great if they walked Billy Hamilton or hit him with a pitch. It would have been great if – I mean, come on! Woulda, coulda, shoulda. Let's try Bill. Bill is in Elk Grove Village. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hi there, Mike. Hi, David. First off, been listening to the score from day one. How long have you been on, Molly?
A long time. I mean, this morning, only a couple hours, but
feels like longer.
Yeah.
Well, anyway – I think in my heart of hearts that Rick Hahn's first choice of manager probably would have been A.J. Hinch. And I'm just wondering how many games clear of Kansas City we would be if A.J. Hinch was actually the manager. By my count, La Russa's probably already lost three games. And if you multiply that over the course of the season, that spells uh-oh.
Yeah, that's holy cow. They did hire Tony La Russa. I don't know that Rick Hahn was involved in that hire. I think that he's a very close friend of Jerry Reinsdorf. Jerry Reinsdorf's the owner of the team, and it seems as if his fingerprints were all over this. His footprints were
on... meant footprints.
Footprints were on Rick's head.
He trampled all over
the
process.
That's what I was trying to say.
Okay, that's exactly what happened. And where does it go from here? Will it get better? Well, I think when people say, well, you know, it's got to get better, there's really nothing you're basing that on except for wishful thinking. And I don't know that it will. I don't know if May 5th won't be the day we look back at is, okay, this was a pivot point. This was the point of no return. And you hope not. I mean, look, this is... Tony La Russa, I would have come back to if I were him. I would have wanted to have one more shot, a team that would look World Series ready. I don't blame him, and I don't blame him fully, as we've been talking about for yesterday. This is an organizational breakdown. You have to prop up people in your organization at times when they need it. Tony La Russa needs help, okay? He needs help from his benches coach, from his staff, from his PR guy, from everybody involved in the organization. You've got to help out Tony La Russa.
And if you actually were to, if you came to the conclusion it was three games that were a problem here in the first 29, you push that out over the course of a season. It's far too many games, no question about that. It's the difference between being a playoff team or not being a playoff team. It's the difference between winning a division or not winning a division. It's the difference between being in a position where if your injured players were able to come back, you could actually have a place for them to play. It's a huge problem. So you've got to understand, while Tony La Russa is a Hall of Fame person, he's not acting like a Hall of Fame manager right now. He's still figuring things out. And I am in total agreement with what you say, David. He needs protection here. He's like a hitter in the lineup. You know, you need more than one guy, and you got to protect them. And it doesn't matter if who was it? Was it I'm drawing a blank. Who was the National League pitcher who won like 14 games the year his team won 28 or something. I mean, it's like it doesn't matter how good one guy is. You need help. It's a team, and they got a huge group of people, and either Tony has to start listening or they've got to figure out a way to get it to him.
When players are young, whether it's a pitcher or a quarterback or a point guard, you say, okay, if it's a rookie, you need to surround that player with protection. You need to get an offensive line to protect your quarterback, and you don't want to put him into the mix. You want to insulate that player as best you can. Same goes with the manager that's been out of the game for 10 years, regardless of his age. And I just don't think the Sox have done that. And, hey, Dustin asked a good question. It's kind of the equivalent of, would you rather me punch you in the face or kick you in the groin? Would Sox fans rather have a cheating A.J. Hinch right now or a tired Tony La Russa?
Well, right now, that's not a fair question.
That's an interesting one, though.
It is an interesting one. 3-1-2. I mean, right now, the answer is pretty evident. Like, let's start cheating. But cheating would be better. We'd be in much better condition. But I don't know that that's a fair answer.
Two thumps, fastball, three, curve.
There you go. It's probably an unfair question at this point. All right. We're going to bring in Ross Tucker. We're going to talk a little NFL. We're going to talk a little NFL draft. We'll ask him about what's going on in Green Bay since everyone seems concerned. Insider calls are brought to you by the Dell Technology Small Business Podference 2.0 podcast series, available on odyssey.com/Dell. We will talk to Ross next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Boy, that's a good question. That's a $1 million question. I think I know Aaron fairly well. And honestly, I just don't see him coming back and just saying, all right, let's bury the hatchet, whatever caused the rift. I'm just going to come back and play because I love the guys. I love the Green Bay fans. I assume that he does. But his rift isn't with the fans nor the players. It's with the front office. So will he just swallow his pride and come in? Maybe, but I don't see that happening. I if there's not a trade, my gut tells me that he'd rather sit out than play.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Brett Favre. He was with ESPN Wisconsin, and suddenly we want to know what Brett Favre thinks.
Suddenly. A week ago, he was a victim of the cancel culture. Now he's the authority on Aaron Rodgers.
What are you going to do? All right. We're delighted to welcome in Ross Tucker. Ross joins us on the El Pamani Hotline, El Pamani Nissan, El Pamani Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, apnissan.com. And, of course, Ross is an Odyssey Sports NFL Insider and Insider Calls are brought to you by Dell Technology, Small Business Podference 2.0 podcast series, available on odyssey.com/Dell. Ross, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Ross.
I am doing fantastic. You guys are loving this, aren't you? You guys are loving this, Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It is the Bears won the draft before they actually went ahead and won the draft, right? This story broke, and everybody in Chicago was gleefully giggling, and then all of a sudden Justin Fields falls, and the Bears go up and get him. And we asked the question, are the Bears looking better, especially in the next 5 years, than maybe the Green Bay Packers?
You know, it's kind of a shame that both those things happened the same night. I mean, you guys could have gone weeks with either one of them, you know? I mean, you could have just look, Bears fans would have been happy with a couple months of Aaron Rodgers Packers drama and hopefully, in your mind, him eventually getting traded or not playing. And you could have gone a couple months just with the excitement of getting Justin Fields and trading up for him. It's almost overlooked. What a shame for you guys, the Chicago talk radio guys, that they both happened the same night.
You're right, but we're going to get a lot of mileage out of both either way, Ross. And when you look at the Rodgers situation, this is the age of player empowerment. You're seeing it more than ever. Is this a case of just a superstar, the reigning MVP, flexing his muscle, or do you think that the Packers still holds the leverage because of some of the realities contractually that they're looking at that really are different than other situations that we've seen?
You know, I think we've gotten to the point where I don't really think that the Packers have the leverage. Now, look, I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to retire, but I think he's stubborn enough, maybe bitter enough, that unless they give him what he wants, I think he won't play, and they would eventually get to a point where it's not tenable and they would trade him a la Carson Palmer with the Cincinnati Bengals, whatever that was, 10 years ago, when Carson was just like, I'm not playing. You know, the interesting thing about Rodgers is I don't think he's got a very good argument to complain about, like, the weapons around him, right? I mean, he's got an all-pro left tackle, one of the five best O-lines in the league, an all-pro receiver, a top-10 running back. You know, sometimes part of me, guys, wants to be like, dude, cry me a river, all right, bro? Like,
right.
It could be a lot worse. However, there's the flip side of it. The flip side of it is he's with an organization that, because I think they don't have an owner, they are good enough to be just good enough to not actually win at all. Like, they are very much forward-thinking, and the Jordan Love pick is evidence of that. It's got to be maddening if you're Rodgers to see Brady go to Tampa and say, I want Gronk, they get Gronk. I want Antonio Brown, they get Antonio Brown. And then they go win the Super Bowl. Meanwhile, Rodgers just doesn't want him to cut Jake Kumerow. Rodgers said the day before Jake Kumerow was a lock. They cut him the next day. Jake Kumerow. I mean, I'm on the biggest sports talk radio station in Chicago talking about Jake Kumerow. It's unbelievable. But it's really, for a lot of these guys, it just becomes a respect thing. Like, it's bad enough they drafted Jordan Love, right? It was not a very smart pick, in my opinion, because of the timing. The value of these rookie quarterbacks is on their rookie contract. So why would you get a guy who, at a minimum, isn't going to play the first 2 years in Jordan Love and might not even play three, it looks like. So whatever. And then they obviously don't take into account the things that Rodgers tells them. So I think he's very frustrated. I think he feels like he has earned and deserves a greater say in his career and the team around him moving forward, like the NBA guys have and like Tom Brady has. So I understand that portion of it. It's not that the team around him isn't good enough. It's that they aren't taking into account his suggestions. I know Russell Wilson feels the same way.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, he's not alone in that around the NFL quarterback scene. And, you know, what I think is interesting is the comment you make about the whole idea of no ownership. You know, it does seem, when you look at Green Bay, that they are all about maintaining what they have and making sure they're not a losing team and they're going to win. But they're never about sell it out at the salary cap. Let's just go win a year. Let's just make sure we win this Super Bowl. That's not their mentality. They are significantly more conservative as opposed to teams that get overly aggressive.
They are committed to doing what it takes to have long-term success,
right,
potentially at the expense of the best chance to win. The thing that's really crazy to me about it, Molly, is when they do get free agents, it usually works. You know, I mean, like Charles Woodson, they don't win that Super Bowl without Charles Woodson. Or even the last couple of years, NFC Championship game, they're not in that game without Za'Darius and Preston Smith or even Adrian Amos. Like, what are we talking about here? The bizarre thing about the Packers being so averse to free agency is they're good at it. Like, they're able a lot of times to get players that are really good and really help them, yet they still just aren't willing, you know, to put the pedal all the way down to the floor.
So, Ross, seeing an opening here in Chicago for, you know, the Bears to close the gap between them and the Packers, obviously Justin Fields is going to be the biggest part of that. You have been around a long time and seen quarterbacks come into the league and the timetable work and not work. If you were Ryan Pace, if you were Matt Nagy, what would your timetable be for Justin Fields?
He would play as soon as I thought he knew what he was doing well enough that he could protect himself. You know, as soon as I felt like Justin wasn't going to do something that let a free guy come. You know, he knows where he's protected. He knows where he's not. He knows who the free rusher is. As soon as he's got that down, I'd put him in. I wouldn't worry about coverages or picks or stuff. You know, that's going to happen. He's kind of got to get through that. But as soon as he can mentally protect himself, then I would put him in there. And I think we've seen a lot of examples of that fairly recently. It is interesting, you know, to compare the situation to Patrick Mahomes. I'm sure you guys have talked about it ad nauseum. But obviously Nagy was there when they traded up in Kansas City and they got Mahomes. There's a lot of similarities between those guys. I think what's interesting is that there was actually more question marks, I would say, about Mahomes than there is about Fields. You know, I mean, Mahomes might have had more crazy off-platform throws, but they're both immensely gifted. But there were more – I mean, Mahomes did some really, really stupid stuff in college. like just unconventional, ridiculous, like off his back foot, pick, like, and you know, you watch that and you're like, I don't know, I mean, you can't do that in the NFL, right? Then after a year he was obviously awesome. So that is what the Bears are trying to accomplish. So I would put Fields in as soon as he can protect himself. Although, you know, the thing I would say, guys, I am, and maybe you guys can help me out with this, I am confused by the Chicago Bears, right? So I thought, and we've had previous conversations, that the GM Ryan Pace and the head coach, Matt Nagy, were on the hot seat. You guys know how I feel about that. I think Pace should probably be gone, and I think Nagy shouldn't be on the hot seat. But, alas, that's where we are. So I guess I kind of thought they'd be all in to win this year. But you let Kyle Fuller go, even cutting Charles Leno to put a rookie in Tevin Jenkins at left tackle, reportedly. I mean, guys, that's a risky move. I mean, you're talking about a guy that he's a good run blocker, but there's some concern there about him as a pass protector, and he's not like the most fluid guy. I mean, I love the way he plays because he's out there just mashing people, but you're putting a guy in that's not the greatest pass protector, that's not the most, the smoothest, most fleet of foot. You put him at left tackle to protect the blind side of a guy like Fields. I'm scratching my head a little bit. You guys tell me, are the Bears trying to win this year or are they not trying to win it? Because it almost, before I thought they were all in to try to save their jobs, Pace and Nagy. Now it's like they've got 1 foot in the 2021 pool and 1 foot in the kind of getting ready for future years pool.
Yeah, you know, I think that the thing we learned through the draft and really at the end of the year is that they're not on a one-year deal. You know, there's a reason the general manager wouldn't tell you what his contract status was and how long he was signed for, probably because everybody would have a heart attack if they knew that he had gotten another year. So there is I don't think either guy is in trouble. I think they understand they're going to be here, and I think they're ready to move forward. I what's fascinating to me is when you decide to start Tevin Jenkins, that pretty much tells you that you're going to start Justin Fields, right? Because at least Fields can run. How can you have a guy like that protecting the blind side of Andy Dalton, who they presumably thought would start when they rushed to sign him?
You're not making these decisions thinking that you have to win next year. They must have an understanding that this is something they could do and they were empowered to do with the future in mind over the present.
Yeah, by the way, what a joke it is that head coach and GM contracts aren't public, but all the players are, right?
Yes.
Like, everybody in my family, everybody always knew how much money I was making or whatever. The contract's public, but the GM and the head coach, like, we don't get to know those. That to me was – but look, I'm not blaming Pace for that. I mean, Belichick, nobody ever knows what his contract is. So that to me has just always been a joke. As far as what you said about Jenkins, I think the counter to that would be Dalton has been around so long. He's got a pretty good feel for the pocket, and he's been around some O-lines. Like last year's Cowboys O-line just got totally wrecked. Mm. So, and Andy did as well at times. So he's got a pretty good sense of knowing when to get rid of the ball. You know, that's the concern. I know Fields can run around, but this is why you guys could even get Fields. He holds on to the ball too long,
right?
Sometimes.
Right.
I mean, you go back and watch the Indiana game. and the Northwestern game, not only against Indiana did he throw some bad picks, but in both those games, it was like, dude, throw the ball. That's the single biggest reason why none of the top three teams took him. You know, it's a really weird thing because I think if the Big Ten just kept the season canceled, he probably would have been the second quarterback to go. Or if he opted out, he might have been the second quarterback to go. But he came back and he showed some flaws. He showed a fly in the ointment against Indiana and against Northwestern, and one of them was holding the ball. So let me just tell you, Tevin Jenkins at left tackle plus Justin Fields holding the ball, that's a bad combo. So I don't know. Maybe they'll see whether or not Jenkins is ready to rock and roll and have Andy Dalton in there as the sacrificial lamb till Jenkins gets some snaps under his belt.
Great stuff. Ross, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you as always.
Thanks, Ross. Good stuff.
Absolutely. See you guys.
All right.
That was Odyssey Sports NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider Calls are brought to you by the Dell Technology Small Business Podference 2.0 podcast series, available on odyssey.com/Dell. All right, we've got a Cubs sweep of the Dodgers. We haven't talked about that enough. We've got White Sox crisis. We keep talking about that. It's not going to change anything, and we'll continue to do so. Both sides of town, Mully and Hahn score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
And Rizzo hits a ground ball, left field, base hit. The Cubs are going to win the ball game. Here comes Duffy to score. The Cubs have swept the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the Cubs are chasing Anthony Rizzo all over the diamond. Rizzo bounced one through the left side. And the Cubs have swept the series. What a finish.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's a pretty good day off for Anthony Rizzo. Gave him the day off. It was fun to see Chris Bryant start at first base in his place, because the first baseman is, you know, he's kind of part doorman. You get to first base and you got to kind of have the chat and how you doing, how you been. And Rizzo is like fantastic. He does a wonderful job of welcoming everyone and talking to him. I just, Chris Bryant, I don't know that that's his personality, but you saw him having his, understanding what the process is like and chatting away. It was fun.
He's having fun. And I think Chris Bryant starts the day at first base. Good for Anthony Rizzo. He had his spa day that ended successfully with the walk-off. And then he ran into the clubhouse to celebrate. But Chris Bryant then, the third baseman that we have come to know for the Cubs, starts at first base but makes the play of the game, helps make the play of the game in the 10th inning from center field. And that was where he was involved in the relay. Muncie had hit the extra base hit. Bryant plays the ball off the wall perfectly, throws to Baez, who throws to Contreras. Bang, bang. That key run, that key play put the Cubs in a position to win it. And that was Chris Bryant playing center field like he had been there all along, like he's a guy that has won a gold glove out there. It just underscored, number one, how good of an arm Baez has, absolutely. But Chris Bryant, whatever you ask him to do this year, he does it, and he does it well.
No question about it. And I'm just curious, when you even say the name Muncie, where does your mind go?
Oh, it goes to back to college. Come on now. That's like sentimental. Ben Rosen and
absolutely.
Good old Ball State University. Chirp, chirp.
Okay, so that helps the Cubs. They complete the sweep of the Dodgers, and they come back to do so 6-5, 11 innings. We talk about Rizzo. Jake Mariznick homered again. Three hits for Duffy. Three runs scored for him. Edward Alzolay pitched fantastic in that game. And you think about where the Cubs are at going into that series. And again, a two-game sweep, the doubleheader sweep, followed by the sweep of the series. Do you think of them differently? Because it's the Dodgers. Because, you know, we got an off day now, so we're going to take a moment to reflect.
Yes, let's reflect.
Do you think of this team in any fashion differently than you did before this series?
Not really.
They're still below 500.
I have to be honest here. Yeah. I mean, I want to. I really do. I want to say that this is the pivot point of the season.
Right.
And after May 5th, everything that comes after this sweep will be positive. And I just don't think they're built that way. I think yesterday, last night, for instance, was the ideal victory for the team and the type of season that Jed Hoyer has described. Last night was threading the needle. You had guys like Duffy and Mariznick who are here to play specific roles, and they did it well. You had Adber Alzolay, who is the pitcher that you hope can develop because you haven't had that guy pitch very well. And you had the strong core guys, you know, rise to the occasion, whether it was a defensive play from Bryant and Baez or the big hit from Anthony Rizzo. So it all came together, but it was only one night and it's only one series. This has been a team too chronic to ups and downs at the plate and certainly with the staff to make me feel like, all right, they're on to something now. I could hope so because of who they beat and who they swept, but I just don't know if that would be kind of getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
All right, so they're off, and then they have the Pirates coming in. The Pirates have been the bane of the early season for the Cubs. The Pirates are a team that if you can sweep the Dodgers, surely you can sweep the Pirates. Is that an unfair statement?
I agree.
I'm just saying, when you look at the Pirates at Wrigley Field this weekend, are you in the sweep mode? Do you think that's what's happening? Where are you at?
I think I'm ordering meatloaf. I think you want to take 2 out of 3. That's not so bad. And you have to avoid losing 2 out of 3. You cannot lose this series, and you have to be realistic about, yeah, you're playing the Pirates, and yeah, you want to say, okay, let's lay down the gauntlet, and we have to get this sweep underway. But you also, your starting pitching has been, you know, not so great lately, and you need a guy who's pitching on Friday to be better than he has been, Zach Davies. And so that's going to follow, you know, with the rotation, who needs to step it up, and your bullpen needs to step it up. And certainly it's nice to get some hitting, some timely hitting and some good defense, but 2 out of 3 would be realistic to me for this Pirates series.
Meatloaf tastes good.
Thanks, yeah, you know, it's funny you play Joe there because a friend of mine texted me and said, do they still do the dance party in the locker room? Do they still do their version of Cub Dub? You know, instead of Club Dub?
Cub Dub? I don't know if they do that. If they did, it was last night. It was up. They were up pretty late.
Yeah.
Because that game didn't end until after 11.
It seems like they do their dancing like after the game. I mean, they were really pleased with that victory. And I don't know what more of a celebration you could have had in the locker room, but that's. Isn't that where they got the whole disco ball thing and the whole
you have to savor every victory. That was the Joe Madden way, and maybe it has continued a little quieter because of the, you know, COVID and everything. I'm not sure. I bet you Jock Peterson would be heavily involved in it because he likes to celebrate. We saw him have a bat flip after a sack fly last night. That was funny to see. Hey, Jock Peterson, welcome to Chicago. That was his welcome to Chicago moment. The wind knocking down that home run, making it a sacrifice fly, and now next time he won't maybe flip his bat when he thinks he's hit one onto Sheffield.
All righty. We're going to take a moment. A lot going on. We're going to continue the conversation. 312-644-6767. We have a texter wondering if they do dance, is it now ballroom dancing since David Ross is the manager? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I really thought that we needed something like a 20-foot python, a magician, or a breakdancer.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.